Many students in New Mexico years ago started in a one-room schoolhouse. I'm going to talk about that. Michael Swickard here. Welcome to Enchanting People of New Mexico, sponsored by the Fresh Chili Company in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Our award-winning Hatch Green and Red Chili, boy, is it good. It's from locally owned farms in Hatch, New Mexico, which is the chili capital of the world. Every Wednesday in our Enchanting People series, we talk about someone or a group of people who've made an impact on New Mexico, such as the thousands of workers who constructed Elephant Butte Dam so that there was plenty of water for commercial agriculture. Without water, there's no green chili and coffee, so it was wonderful we had enough water. Today, I want to talk about the one-room schoolhouses and those teachers in very remote areas of New Mexico, 100 to 130 years ago, maybe even longer. Talk about a hard job. Usually it was first grade to eighth grade, all in one room. One person, usually a woman, who had to keep the stove going, chopping the wood, create the lessons for each of the grades, handle the discipline with the older boys if that was needed. These women, I tell you, they were tough. And I want to celebrate this New Mexico institution of one-room schoolhouses. First, a little business. There are no one-room schoolhouses left in New Mexico. There's a few somewhere in the United States. For better or worse, that institution has ended. How do I know about one-room schoolhouses? Well, I have three relatives who taught in the one-room schoolhouse era. My grandmother, Frida, her sisters, Hannah, Emily, and Catherine. They all came out from upstate New York along about 1908 and filled several area jobs. My grandmother taught near Cloudcroft in a one-room school for 1 year, and then she moved to a one-room school at the old Three Rivers, not the one on Highway 54, but you have to go about 5 miles to the east of there on a dirt road to that Three Rivers, the one-room school. A couple years later, she and her sister Catherine taught for several years, maybe six, seven, eight, in the large eight-room, two-story schoolhouse you can still see in White Oaks. It wasn't quite like a one-room schoolhouse, but it still had a lot of the same flavor. It was very much a Western environment, with the kids being connected to gold mining or cattle, sheep ranching. But again, it was a little easier than one-room teaching. But at one time in the 1960s, my grandmother was asked about being out west from upstate New York, and she produced an article that she had kept all those years. It was from a national magazine, Harper's Bazaar, and was entitled East versus West. My grandmother had underlined a section that spoke to her. The writer of the article was Louise Sneed Hell, who was a well-known leader in Denver, Colorado, in the society there, and had written the article. She was writing about the common myths about living in the western part of the nation, the myths from back east. Hill shared that it was impossible for some readers in the East to understand because they viewed the West as the wild, wild West, where the people there lived in the most primitive ways, with stray Indians walking about and the occasional herd of buffalo roaming through the streets of each town. Louise Sneed Hill asserted that, contrary to the popular beliefs back East, Denver was a civilized cosmopolitan city that was proudly in the dazzling sunlight beneath the deep blue Colorado sky. Well, my mother laughed as she read that passage and said that the same thinking applied to New Mexico, where they had all moved out to, which was a territory, not even a state yet. What I want to talk about in this People podcast was the effect on the territory of New Mexico, and then it became a state, of these women coming from the East and providing education and much more. Michael Swickard here, Enchanting People of New Mexico. Every Wednesday, we do a podcast on people special to New Mexico. hit subscribe to automatically get these podcasts. Talking about the New Mexico rural one-room schoolhouses, the Little Red Schoolhouse, from the year about 1890, 1880 to about 1940. It did several very important things in the territory of New Mexico, and then in 1912 we became a state, but we still had a lot of rural schools. The one-room schoolhouses did some things that are not talked about today. First, it allowed very rural families working on ranches and way out away from everything to have education for their kids in reading, writing, and arithmetic. Often, this was from the McGuffey readers, and you can search about McGuffey readers. I even have a set here in my own library. They were primers to be used grades 1 through 6 from about 1870 to about 1950, so that students could learn the alphabet and start reading and writing. By the year 1920, just so you know how important they were, 100 million of these first textbooks had been sold. Now, remember, at that time, the American population was only 106 million people total, and so they had sold 100 million of them. If we look 150 years back, a significant portion of the American population was functionally illiterate. They might be able to sign their name, but they actually could not read. It was common for some people to learn a few words and to act like they could read, like labels on canned goods had pictures. But for people who labored in the cattle industry and some industries, mining and stuff, it was good enough. But the nation needed a population that was literate. So from the 1850s on was the push for public education in one sort or another. These one-room schoolhouses taught the letters and the numbers and a lot more with the population. As late as 1930, about half of the nation's school children, get this, lived in rural areas, and about 60% of the schools as late as 1930 were one-room school buildings. America went to the moon and returned safely in 1969, with some of those engineers having come from rural schools. Being a teacher in these schools was a profession for women at a time when there were many other areas closed for employment. My grandmother taught a lot of things, and then she had something else she liked to teach. She had an Underwood No. 5 typewriter, I still have it, and a telegraph key. Both were part of her 1908 and onward technology package that she taught with. She felt it was important for students to learn to type and also to learn the telegraph system of Morse code. That sounds kind of silly, but now that there was always jobs open for people that could do telegraphy. And so if they went to town and they'd learned how to do the telegraphy, they could actually find a job. Another advantage of the one-room schoolhouse was that the older students, they helped the younger students. And if you were in third grade, you'd probably already heard the third grade items the year before or the year before that. But it's true that the best way to learn is to need to teach it. So the students who help teach the younger students learned those lessons even better. It was not very competitive. It was cooperative learning, since often the discussions were wide-ranging across all the different ages of the students, and quite often was about agriculture. And there was no school bus. Students, the kids walked the mile or more to school and back. Some, if they were lucky, could ride a horse or a donkey, turn the horse loose and it would go home, and then they'd have to walk home. The teacher had to arrive early enough to fire up the pot-bellied stove so the classroom would be warm in the wintertime, and then also they got that stove going to be able to cook lunch for the kids. It took a very rugged individual to be able to spend a year out in the middle of nowhere, New Mexico, doing this. Most county-run school systems required that the women that had been hired to be unmarried, so for the most part, they were. My grandmother, for more than a decade, lived in these rural schools, and then she met my grandfather, who was a Southern Pacific locomotive engineer, and after they dated a while, they got married, so she stopped teaching, and she raised a family, and luckily, that's why I'm here. The heavily male population in New Mexico benefited by women coming here from other parts of the United States and then getting married and raising a family. It really did help New Mexico. Michael Swickard here, Enchanting People of New Mexico. Hit subscribe to automatically get these podcasts. I'm talking about a huge change in New Mexico that was not anticipated, nor is it often talked about. From the 1890s to about the 1950s, up to 1950, the rural one-room schoolhouse, and often the young women who came to the territory of New Mexico as school teachers, that's what I'm talking about, like my grandmother and her three sisters did. The civilizing influence on the small New Mexico communities included the education that the students were able to experience. Did you know that the experience they got in these one-room schools allowed them to even go to college? An example was New Mexico College of Agriculture and Mechanical Arts. I know you don't know that one, but it's now called New Mexico State University, since a large number of the rural students in New Mexico had an adequate primary and secondary education. That college flourished. Here is one more influence. In many of the small towns, while not elaborate, there were libraries started that are still there, because many of the rural teachers came from more sophisticated towns where there were libraries, and so that was the thing to do, was to start a library, and people could borrow books. It was a very difficult yet rewarding job being a one-room schoolhouse teacher, but literally thousands of women came over the years quietly to New Mexico and served our students well, not to take anything away from all the people who are teachers today. We at Enchanting People of New Mexico salute these efforts there in the past. In fact, when man first stepped upon the moon in 1969, there were many of the engineers and technicians who started their journey in the one-room schoolhouses. From the one-room schoolhouses to the stars, what a great journey, don't you think? Let's talk about the Fresh Chili Company in Las Cruces, New Mexico. They're the ones that sponsor these podcasts. They have a great website. It's freshchilico.com. Run it all together, freshchilico.com. You can see all of the many products that they ship to your door. I especially love their blend of red and green chili. They have a number of different red and green blends. I like that green and that red blend because it's something that taste-wise I really like. You can get their chilies for the most part in mild, medium, hot, and extra hot to meet your taste heat needs. I like medium and maybe a little bit of hot. I want to point out some people haven't noticed there's something else you can do. You can buy a yearly Fresh Chili membership, which does a lot of things. So if you buy a yearly Fresh Chili membership, first you get 20% off every order within the United States. You get free shipping, 5% cash back on every order, $10 in store credits upon signing up, easy access to new drops when they get something new, membership-only products, and priority customer support. Check that out. Go to freshchilico.com and check out the Fresh Chili membership. Let me tell you about something at the Fresh Chili Company I find over-the-top great. It is their Salsa Roja. The full name is for you. The Fresh Chili Company website, freshchilico.com, is Hatch Jalapeno Salsa Roja. It's inspired by traditional Mexican salsa. It's a creamy and spicy, wow, what a taste, made from red jalapeno peppers from Hatch. That's the chili capital of the world. The salsa goes well with chips and tacos. Let me tell you what I do with it. I put it on salads. It's so very good. Very, very good. This is Michael Swickard with Enchanting Stories of New Mexico, brought to you by the Fresh Chili Company. Thank you for your time today. We'll always have lots of news and stories about New Mexico for you on these podcasts. If you have something or someone you'd like me to talk about, write to me, michael@freshchilico.com, michael@freshchilico.com. Have a great rest of your day. Oh, yes, and eat plenty of that Hatch Valley chili. Like I always say, some chili is good, more is better, as long as it's Hatch Valley chili. Bye for now.